Hello, 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 and a big welcome to the Simple Wins podcast. Today, I have with me Josh Wise. And here's the thing. This is what I want to talk to you guys about today, because something that I've been noticing over the, I guess, as we're going through this whole change in business, especially with AI taking over and all these types of concepts, what we're starting to notice here is that things are becoming commoditized. And I think that's a big thing that we've started noticing, where it's now starting to be where negotiations are starting to have to take place, right? Where we need to go into the concepts of, okay, how do we be able to explain a point of view to somebody and be able to negotiate across the table? Because we're looking at bigger and bigger changes, right, in the market. We're not selling a service anymore. We're more selling a result. And this is one of the big reasons I wanted to have Josh on this podcast, is because he is an expert, okay, when it comes to negotiation. He is renowned for what he does, and he's focused on conflict resolution and leadership expert. As a co-founder of the Global Negotiation Initiative at Harvard University, director of the MS in Organizational Leadership in Negotiation, and president of Negotiation Works, he brings unparalleled expertise to this field. So Josh, a big welcome to the show. So excited to have you here.
Thanks, Adam. It's great to join you.
Absolutely. So what I really want to talk to you about is this concept of high level services that I know a lot of businesses are changing to. Okay. What we've been noticing in the market today is that the concept of a service provider is almost dead in the water. I don't know if you've been following up with AI or anything like that, but yeah, it's not going too well if you're doing basic types of tasks. And what we're really shifting towards is this concept of solving big issues for organizations, right? But when you're solving big issues, what ends up happening here is it becomes more deeper that you're getting ingrained in the company. You're not just selling something that somebody can go ahead and install on their computer, okay? You're selling a long-term type of an asset. And I really want to get into this before you kind of get into the negotiation of, say, a sales cycle. Let's start a little bit before. What are you typically seeing as been the best ways to pre-frame yourself before you actually get to the negotiation stage?
Well, it's a great question. And frankly, you know, the interesting thing is that negotiations can be set up for success, right? There are a lot of what we would call moves away from the table, if you will, that you can take to try to help to structure the negotiation in the way that you want. There's actually a great book called 3D Negotiation, where that's one of the dimensions of negotiation, is to think about how can I potentially set the table up in the way that's going to benefit me as best as possible. And you know, what that really means is that, you know, when you go into a negotiation, any negotiation, you have to engage in preparation, but too often people prepare the wrong way, because one of the real challenges with negotiation is that we're always working with incomplete information. So there are things that you know that I don't, and vice versa, right? And so if I come in with a plan, it rarely works, because there's just so many unexpected things that emerge, evolve, and change as a negotiation sort of moves through different stages. So part of the approach and part of the goal that you want to set for yourself is to use a contingency planning way of thinking that, hey, let me be clear about my objective, because again, you know, one of the things that people get wrong about negotiation is they think the purpose of negotiation is to reach agreement. And it's not. It's not hard to reach agreement. The purpose of negotiation is to meet your objective, whatever that might be. And so if you have that mindset, then when you contingency plan, you basically say, okay, here's my goal. Here's where I know I would like to end up. And here are three or four different ways that I can get to that endpoint. And what that does is it helps to train your mind to recognize that this process will have twists and turns that you didn't expect and that you didn't know were going to come to the forefront, and that you'll be prepared. You know, if you don't prepare that way, then you sort of end up in what I would call the freakout moment, where your plan goes out the window, you're sitting there, you don't know what to do. And so you start to agree to things that don't really make much sense. I see it a lot with people when they begin to negotiate. That's one of the real failings that they experience.
Absolutely. And you just talked about coming and focusing on the objective. I think that's a really interesting thing to kind of dig into a little deeper, because most people, they're going ahead and they're trying to obviously position their business to a company, right? And you're talking about the objective. What is that objective? Like, what are we trying to do when we're looking, okay, we're trying to get our objective done, the client is trying to get their objective. How do those two objectives kind of align?
Well, I think one interesting thing is that much of the time people assume they don't. And in fact, there's often a lot of alignment. You know, we talk about underlying interests in negotiation, the things that are really important to us, the things that motivate us. And there are going to be certain things that we want to achieve, like, you know, we would like the most profit for this particular product or whatever it is, right? But we would also, if we're working with a client, particularly over the long term, you know, we have a joint interest in delivering whatever it is that we want to deliver on budget, on schedule, right? There's a number of things that we have in common when it comes to negotiation, but too often we don't focus on those things. And this sort of leads me to an important point that I don't think people talk nearly enough about, which is that when you're deciding on a negotiation strategy, the primary sort of factor that you need to consider is the nature of the relationship. So if your negotiation is going to be a one-off kind of scenario where you're going to do this and you're never going to engage with that person, you're going to use a different scenario, a different approach. But, you know, I do a lot of training with governments, businesses, nonprofit, you name it. And if we just take the example of business for a minute, right? If when I do these trainings, I say, how many of your negotiations are one-offs, you know, where you negotiate with people once versus, you know, you're going to negotiate with them now and you want to build the relationship over time and you want them to be a long-term client. The answer is typically about 10% are one-off negotiations and 90% are, I've got to not only meet my short-term goals, but also build the long-term relationship. If that's your, you know, mindset and your way of working and your business model, which is the case for most businesses, then you have to have a different approach. One that sees the other not as a best friend or an enemy, but actually a problem-solving partner, right? And that your negotiations ought to get easier and better, like the deals should move from good to great when you have those kinds of scenarios. Because what you're wanting to really achieve, and the sweet spot of negotiation, if I can put it that way, is you meet your short-term goal as best as possible, but you're also cultivating and developing the relationship. So as you go, people are sharing more and more information. They're sharing more about what they value, what matters to them, et cetera, which is often not what people share. People often will hold back information, and that limits what you can do in a negotiation. So a very big part of this is cultivating the relationship over the longer term.
And how does that kind of look like? I mean, I think this is fascinating what you're saying. So if we're talking about over the long term, right? I think a lot of, especially if you look at salespeople, right? Or even founders, you're looking at the concept of like, I want to get the deal across the line. But it sounds like what you're saying is that the deal is almost never ending in a sense.
Should be.
Right. That's okay. Right. So let's talk about that. How do you view that deal? How do you view the consistent negotiations over and over?
So if you think about it, you know, when you initially start to work with someone, you're going to land on a deal that maybe okay, like reasonable enough for each of you to say this meets my objective as much as possible at this stage, right? The problem when we negotiate initially is that we don't have a relationship. So you have to go slowly, you have to tread carefully, and you have to figure out what can we get done. But once you've done that and once you've built a relationship, then you can have a different conversation. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. So I was working with a recycling company here in the US, and they started out with a company that would do the pickup and drop off of the recycling materials and things along those lines. Okay. They had a 2-year contract. And when I was doing a training with them on negotiation at the break, two junior associates came up to me and said, look, we have this deal with this company and we're just about to re-up with them and, you know, do an extension, et cetera. And we just want to ask you a couple of questions. Like, is there anything else we should be thinking about? And I said, absolutely. I said, how's the relationship between you? And they said, you know, it's gone well. Like, we did what we said we were going to do. They did the same thing. I said, well, that's an opportunity to then step back and ask them, hey, you know, we did this first deal. Seemed like it was reasonable for both of us. But if we could go back to that first deal, would there have been things that you would have liked to have had in there that we didn't talk about? Right. And one of the things that we try to do when you're, you know, say at the next negotiation after the first one is to ask questions about what do you really value? Like, what would be meaningful for you here in this situation going forward that perhaps we had not factored in. And when I talked to them about that, they were like, actually, you know, the more that we think about it, there were a couple of things that, you know, the length of contract, if we can extend that out, that's going to be great for us, because knowing that we have a steady stream of income, the safety in this longer term contract, that has value for us. I'm like, okay, so maybe go from 2 years to either 3 or 4, if you can get them to agree, right? Things along those lines. And so we actually call, what we call that is post-settlement settlement. So like, let's say, Adam, you and I sat down and created an agreement, right? Before you and I sign off on it, I might say to you, hey, just out of curiosity, is there anything that we might add to this agreement that would have value for you? And what would that look like? And while you're asking that question, you also want to be thinking broadly and thinking, if they say, you know, that we could add in this or that or whatever it might be, then we could ask for something that's currently not in the deal that we know would be valuable. So for example, like with the recycling company, one of the things that they had said to me when we were talking about this and I introduced this concept to them, they said, you know, actually, if we could get the service company to bill us at the end of the month, that would actually really help with our billing cycle and cash flow and things like that. And I was like, well, have you ever asked them or not? And they said, no. And so again, they wove that in. They said, you know, would you guys be amenable to shifting our payment schedule to the end of the month as opposed to the beginning? And the other side said, sure, because we actually have our own cash flow things and most of our stuff is done differently. So the point is that you start to get into, like, when you have the parameters of a deal, you can then start thinking more creatively. And the key is, if you have a decent relationship with the other side, they're going to be willing to share information with you. And that's what you need. You know, information is the currency of negotiation. And so the better the relationship is that we have, the more you're willing to say, well, you know, if you could do this, that would actually be really beneficial for us.
That is fantastic. I mean, the two things I just picked up there, the first one that when, I mean, going ahead and talking about how you're adding value, right? You're right before the deal even closes, because I think a lot of salespeople, they're just like, we got to get them to sign, right? But what you're saying is to actually ask, is there anything else that we can add? And it's genius because it creates this or that type of a relationship, right? Where it's, I give you a little bit of something, right? That really helps solidify it. Because I mean, also think about it too. A lot of people, they don't like sales reps because they're pushy. It's the truth. And what you're saying is to basically be the opposite of pushy, is to literally try to work with them. And then once they give you that answer, it's like, absolutely, we can do this. But would you guys mind doing this for us as well? And this way, both of you guys get a little something from that type of a deal. And I think that's a really, really good way to think of it. And the other thing I just kind of picked up there too, that you were talking about or at the beginning, is this concept of this evergreen type of negotiation, where you're actually, the second time that you go for negotiation, you ask them point blank, is there anything else, or is there anything that you wish we talked about before, or anything that you wish we included in the deal before that we didn't necessarily include? That's a genius way, because what you're doing is you're basically, in a sense, I mean, we do it when you're going against a competitor, right? Or somebody, if they had a bad experience, for example, with a competitor, and say, hey, when you were working with this person, is there anything that you wish they did that they didn't? And what you're basically saying here is to be that, do that. Don't let a competitor take that. That's a really good way to think of this, Josh. I mean, seriously,
yeah.
Great way to think
of it. Well, and the other thing, and what's nice about it, you know, a lot of times people equate compromise with negotiation, and sometimes that's necessary. But when you get down to what the underlying interests are, like what really matters to people, much of the time, it's not about compromise, right? The shift from the end of the month billing cycle to the beginning didn't cost that recycling company anything. It didn't matter to them, right? And that's what you're kind of wanting to look for, are those things where the other side values something and it's not a huge concession on your part to do that. And there's, you know, the interesting thing is that if you can get into that mode and that way of thinking, then, you know, you actually uncover a lot of those things. It's, the problem is that people bring a mindset to negotiation where they assume everything they want, the other side is diametrically opposed to that. And that's not true. there's a lot of things that you might want that are not at all difficult for me to give you. And frankly, it doesn't even impact my way of thinking or doing, right? But I have to ask that and I have to explore that. And I think that's the problem, is that when people negotiate, the very traditional thinking about negotiation is hold everything back, don't share any information, that kind of thing. And you cannot come up with really good deals if you approach negotiation that way. And that's not to say, by the way, that when you don't know the other side, like, you always have to start slowly, but you know, I would certainly say the second round of negotiation, the third round of negotiation, that's where now you know each other. Hopefully you've all lived up to what you said you were going to do. And if you have, you've built some trust over time. And that's the opportunity to be asking these questions and saying, how do we do this as best as possible? Like, let's not have a deal that's a race to the bottom. Let's have a deal that's a race to the best possible outcome.
Amazing. Josh, where can people go to learn more about you?
So my website is probably the best place. So it's www.joshuanweiss.com. And that has all my books, articles, talks, offerings, all that kind of fun stuff.
Josh, this was absolutely fantastic. This is great, because I mean, so many people are missing this concept of negotiation. I mean, I've seen it when it comes to especially sales reps, just not knowing how to move it across. So Josh, I want to thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you coming out.
Sure. My pleasure. It was a lot of fun, Adam.
Absolutely. And everyone, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you on the next episode. Have a good one.